Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the show where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here with Chris.
Hello.
And Steven.
Hi.
And today we are here to review The Pope's Exorcist, the film that I picked live on tape from the Vatican when I was in Italy. But before we dig into that, we got a quick program note to start off the show. Some news from Chris and Steven, so I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
We have some news indeed. And look, there's no easy way to say this, so we'll just come out and say it. Steven and I leaving the show, leaving Every Horror Movie on Netflix after 5 years.
Seven years.
It's definitely time.
It feels like 30 years. And we're staying on through our year-end episode, traditional year-end episode. And we will talk more about, you know, our personal journey and all that and do some retrospective stuff on the next episode. This will be a pretty normal episode, but just wanted to give you some warning and some heads up that Patrick's going to continue the show. That's an important point. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've sort of heard some episodes lately that Patrick's done with his friends, but you know, I think, I think I can speak for Steven and myself on this. Kurt, jump in at any time if you want. It's just, you know, been harder and harder to keep up with the show, as I'm sure our listeners have noticed. And we've sort of reduced our frequency and kept reducing our frequency. And, I think have less energy than we did 7 years ago, getting older, getting some different priorities in life. And I'd rather go out when I have a little bit of energy left and I still want to do the show a little bit than kick the can down the road any further.
Yeah, well said, Chris. And to be clear, there's no drama here or anything. It's just priorities change in life. I'm sure you'll still hear from us at some point. I will continue to be active on the Discord. I'm keeping my book club running, though also at a reduced frequency, at least for the time being.
So yeah, let's plug the Discord at the top of the show, because I plan to still be checking in on that. You can find the link to that in our show notes. Our Every Horror Movie on Netflix Discord, lively community of horror aficionados. And yeah, I'm sure I will be back on a infrequent basis to guest, but I just rather, Patrick's got some ideas for the show. Patrick has the enthusiasm to keep the show going at a regular mm-hmm. schedule, and that's what the show deserves, and that's what our listeners deserve, and we don't want to get in the way.
So you don't need lazy motherfuckers like us holding things back.
Lazy motherfuckers groaning. And it's just, you know, I still enjoy doing the show. And last night I was getting a little sad looking at the Netflix catalog and all the great films I've yet to review, like Viral. But
I'll make sure to have you back on as a special guest when we do that one.
Yeah, please do. Please do. But, you know, it's just it gets harder and harder as you get older to just find it. And it's not just recording the episodes, editing the episodes, distributing the episodes, watching the movies. And it's just it was something that I had a lot of joy in 7 years ago. And I can feel that my attitude has changed to where I come home and I'm like, shit, I'm recording a podcast tomorrow, which means tomorrow night I'm booked. And tonight I gotta watch this horrible movie.
yeah. Even doing it monthly, it has worn on me for quite a while. And hopefully, with a break, I'll be more enthusiastic about any kind of participation in the future. Yeah.
So that's all we have to say on that for tonight. Again, we'll be back on our year-end episode to have a more, you know, sentimental retrospective. But as Leonard Cohen said when I saw him right before he died, tonight I'll give you everything that I've got.
Well, you're both going to be missed tremendously, both by me and I'm sure our listeners out there, but I'll try and save my tissues for the year-end episode when we take a little stroll down memory lane, not just for this past year, but for the past 7 years as well.
God bless our listeners. And
God bless them.
I'll talk more about that next episode. But
yeah. And of course, I will also stress, like, hope to see you both back for movies of your choice. Maybe a little more elective element to the participation instead of being forced to watch, you know, The Pope's Exorcist. The Pope's Exorcist. But before we get into that capital F film, we got some horror catch-up to do, especially you guys have some horror catch-up to do because we haven't all gotten together in a little bit. So, like, Stephen, what have you been watching or reading or enjoying?
You know, I'm keeping the list short because honestly, I had like half a page of stuff on my notebook next to my laptop and nobody needs to hear all that. But I've been watching the also bittersweet final season of What We Do in the Shadows, which I think ends probably the week this is coming out, if I have a good idea about when this is coming out. It's sort of starting to spin its wheels, but goddamn, I'm going to miss Laszlo.
Oh, yes, my king.
I'm going to miss the whole crew. So that's been a lot of fun. Also cool to see Tim Heidecker on this season.
Oh.
Hero of mine. And have you been watching it, Patrick?
No, I haven't started it yet, actually. But that's very exciting.
No spoilers for the role he plays, but Steve Coogan gets a special guest spot in an episode as well. So it's cool to see two of my favorite funny people as they close the books on what has been an amazing and hilarious show. Over at the book club, which is still going, I wouldn't say strong because I've been slacking, but we're reading, it's a Paperbacks from Hell selection, another one like The Auctioneer, called The Nest by Gregory A. Douglas from, I believe, 1980. And this thing is a wild time capsule. It's a mutant cockroach book set on a small New England island. And man, every offensive trope you can possibly imagine occurs at least once every couple of pages, if not paragraphs. It is, if you enjoy being offended by misguided camp in the way that I do, I think you would have a hoot with this. And Mike and I still have kind of a Mike from It Slays is reading along as well. We have a little bit of a ways to go, so there might be still time to jump in on that. That's The Nest by Gregory A. Douglas. And then lastly, I'm trying to get in the holiday spirit this year. And so I watched Krampus for the first time. Who is that director? He did Trick or Treat and Godzilla King of Monsters.
Adam Doherty. Oh. No.
And Michael Doherty? Michael Doherty. I had a decent time with it. My expectations were very low. I'm not the biggest fan of Trick or Treat, though I do enjoy watching it every couple of Halloweens. But I had a decent enough time with it. You know, I love Adam Scott and Toni Collette as the lead couple in it. There's lots of just kind of fun, creative, practical monster stuff in it. Krampus himself, the design is awesome and terrifying. So that's a movie I'll probably continue to throw into my Christmas rotation.
I didn't recall the two of them starring in that. That makes me very interested in seeing that now.
Yeah, it borrows a little too much from Christmas Vacation, which is a movie I hate frankly.
Christmas Vacation.
I absolutely hate it. And I think it's Rob Corddry plays the who's the red, like the hillbilly brother in Christmas Vacation?
Randy Quaid.
It's basically a ripoff of Randy Quaid.
Oh, okay.
That stuff is a little obnoxious, but otherwise I thought it was like pretty cute and charming, if slight. Patrick, what have you been up to?
Been reading a lot of horror, still kind of finishing up some of my Halloween season reads, stuff that the library finally got to me a ways after Halloween. But I recently read Carrie, the book, for the first time, which was really interesting. Have you read that, Stephen?
No, I haven't.
It was, I really enjoyed it. I was struck by how faithful, actually, the film is in a lot of ways. There's a lot of supplemental material in the book. It's a, I'm so afraid I'm going to use the wrong word right now, epistolary novel, right? Where there are like sources from,
like letters and
fictional
things?
So there's like TV reports and fake magazine articles sort of chronicling the national coverage around Carrie, interwoven with the story that you know from the movie. Mm-hmm. And there's also kind of an interesting suggestion of like a broader movement of other young people being affected by telekinesis as well. So it was really interesting, both in the faithfulness but both in how similar it was to the story that I knew and how different. So I really enjoyed that one, and it's a super short read, so would recommend. Also checked out Only the Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones, who I know is not so beloved in the Amon book club.
I love him as a personality.
Yeah.
He's great, but his books that I've read so far have not impressed. So I'm curious to hear how that one went down.
I really enjoyed it. For those who might not be familiar with it, it's about a group of indigenous friends who are sort of haunted by this sort of mysterious event from their past. There was a night, like a Thanksgiving hunt they went on that went wrong in some way that slowly revealed over the course of the book. And it's almost arranged as a series of short stories, but they are all very connected. Each one revolves around a different friend. And I really enjoyed the character building that goes on as you learn more and more about each character and what happened to them in the past. It is also quite horrifying. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, and it makes me curious actually to check out My Heart is a Chainsaw, just because like this author interests me, and I'm curious to see like why it hit you all so wrong and if it hits me wrong in the same way that it did you. But I really enjoyed Only the Good Indians.
Okay, yeah, I'm open to giving him another shot. If you'll know whether or not you're gonna like My Heart is a Chainsaw within probably 10 pages, and also know that it's the beginning of a trilogy too.
Oh, so
there's a potential for a long haul if you really like the character of Jade Daniels.
Okay, fair enough.
Your mileage may vary.
Yeah, he's a KingCast guy, right?
He's been on many times.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll have to look him up on there.
Yeah, his episode appearances are completely outrageous because he's an outrageous person. He's had a lot of really scary and dangerous sounding animal encounters that he discusses without much emotion at all. Seems pretty fearless.
He reads his own acknowledgments at the end of the audiobook for Only the Good Indians, and I was like, this dude has such a weird deadpan demeanor. I really enjoyed it. And such that you could tell just a deadpan sense of humor to the way he read his own acknowledgments. But yeah, I'll have to check that out. Chris, what have you been consuming in the horror world?
Consuming, not much. I did a couple real life horror related things. We just had in town a Christmas horror Krampus craft festival that I walked through, and
Met Krampus.
I met Krampus, and he was so fucking scary. They're like, yeah, come get a photo with Krampus. I'm like, I want to get a photo with Krampus. It's $5 for a photo with Krampus. I'm like, all right,
what a deal.
When are you gonna have this opportunity again? I could not look at Krampus in the eye. He was too fucking scary. He was wearing, like, his eyes were shining through, coming through the, like, I think it was a mask, but it was a very scary mask that was blended into his face with makeup quite well. And very lifelike and very scary. I've seen some Krampuses in my day. This was a very frightening one.
Wow.
I was warning the vendors at the craft fair. I was like, have you seen Krampus? No, I've been wanting to go back there. Don't do it. He's too scary.
Also, I'm sad now that I missed that market. I wish I had met Krampus.
I'm sure he's got a good picture.
Yeah, I got a picture, and I'm sure you'll have the opportunity next year.
Yeah.
And then I also went to a historic tour of a historic building in our region, and kind of unremarkable, except there was a Q&A with a self-professed spiritual medium and a self-professed ghost hunter. And they kind of showed their PowerPoints, and you know, man, I don't know. I'm sure stuff we've talked about before. I want to believe, but I don't. And especially not coming from these particular characters, but That was kind of interesting. I want to believe in spirits. I don't really have any interesting takeaways from that. But this one woman was talking about how, you know, the voice of the spirits are talking to you if you listen, and they can help you find a lost dog, for example. All kinds of things.
Wow.
Anytime you have that little feeling, could be a spirit.
You sound a lot like my neighbor that I shared a documentary clip of with
you. Yeah.
More on that some other time.
Well, speaking of wanting to believe, unless you had other horror catch-up,
no,
Chris,
not at all.
Speaking of wanting to believe, let's talk about The Pope's Exorcist, which has a very special connection to Amon. The deep Amon lore fans will remember our episode on The Devil and Father Amort, a very strange documentary directed by Chris's hero, William Friedkin.
Yeah, Billy.
Billy, your bud.
R.I.P.
Which is about this guy, Father Gabriel Amort, who was a legendary exorcist within the Catholic Church. And if you want to learn about how shocked I was when I found out the Catholic Church has actual professional exorcists, you can go listen to that episode. But The Pope's Exorcist is a fictional film based on books by Father Amort, Russell Crowe.
Who says say it's fictional?
Yeah.
true. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess I should say it's a narrative film compared to Friedkin's documentary.
Well, yeah, Friedkin's documentary, which of course...
There may be more truth actually to this film than Friedkin's documentary.
Yeah, because Friedkin's documentary ends with him basically talking about the events of the Pope's exorcist as if they happened to him. Who's to say? It's insane. And this movie's based on two nonfiction books by Father Amort, right?
Purportedly nonfiction.
Right. Yeah. It's like we're in like sort of the Conjuring sphere where like this guy writes all these books about his ghost busting. And then.
And I hear the books are good.
The books are good.
Lest we get too ahead of ourselves.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that a little more later.
But yeah, I felt close to Father Amort having seen that documentary and like seeing real footage of this guy. And William Friedkin like became friends with him. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the end of the I haven't seen this documentary since we watched it for the show. I remember like at the end, Father Amort like gets on the elevator and it like fades out to white, and William Friedkin's like, Father Amort enriched my life. Which is high praise from William Friedkin, who's pretty abrasive often. But
And then he died.
Unless you're who's the Greek guy who directed Z? Kostas.
Oh,
Costigavras.
That's the only guy I've ever heard him just say fulsome praise about in every interview he's ever done. It's like, there's a film Z by Costa-Gavras.
I hope I'm getting that name right, but yeah, we're something talking like about that. The same person.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so I was.
You didn't hear me say Mandalore.
Mandalore.
When you said Costas.
Oh God, I wish. But yeah, so I was very curious to see this because we saw that documentary, and I wanted to see how faithful this would be, so to speak, to the character that we met in the documentary. And at its best, it kind of shines through. Well, Russell Crowe, the whole movie is a little goofy, but Russell,
a little,
oh, we'll talk about that. It's a little goofy, but, Russell Crowe at times sort of has the like bumbling charm of the real life Father Amort, who like seemed like a kindly old guy who would thumb his nose at the devil in a very cute way and kind of had some quirks to him.
Cracking jokes all the time.
Yeah.
In the face of terror.
Yeah, I'd been curious about this one for a bit because I remember, like, I think you and me, Chris, riffing about it when this came out and being like, The Pope's Exorcist, what a weird fucking name for a movie. And then, like, my head exploding when I looked it up and found out it was based on this same dude that we had already learned quite a bit about, thanks to Billy.
Yeah.
And then I was even more shocked when this was, like, kind of a hit. Like, it did well at the box office, and it's kind of one of those contemporary like post-COVID box office stories where I think there wasn't a ton of competition necessarily, but it's still fascinating me. So when it popped on Netflix, I was like, all right, time to check out what this has to offer.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, our story is Russell Crowe stars his father Gabriel Amort, and we sort of see his, you know, we see him solving an exorcism case in the prologue, and then we kind of see that he's a controversial figure in the Vatican. There's many high profile people in the church who think the church has moved beyond the need to have a full-time exorcist. And so there's some of that. And then sort of in parallel, we meet a young woman and her teenage daughter and her like 10-year-old son. I don't know. 10? Is he 10?
I'm so bad at
kids' ages. And this is set in 1984 or something, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So the prime.
No cell phones.
No cell phones. This family has just the patriarch of the family is deceased in car accident that traumatized everybody.
Impaled in a car accident.
Impaled. In fact, the son who was in the car, too short to get impaled, has not spoken since.
And maybe we don't want him speaking.
Maybe we don't. And they've just inherited an abbey, which is basically a castle in Spain. It reminded me of Castle Freak.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen Castle Freak?
I haven't.
I love Castle Freak. Giorgio.
But there was no freak in the... Well, actually, there kind of is a freak in the basement in this one.
Oh, wait. No, I have seen Castle Freak.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not when you said freak in the basement, it clicked.
Yeah. Okay. The movie with the freak in the castle didn't click, but the freak in the basement.
I was thinking of it as... I don't know what I was thinking of, honestly.
All right. Well... so, you know, they're doing renovations because this is the only thing that this family has going for them. They lost their breadwinner, but they've inherited this castle. They're going to fix it up, turn it into an Airbnb, and that's their financial plan for the next 30 years. So they're doing this construction work on it. Long story short, they unearth a demonic presence that possesses the boy, and Father Amort has to go, save them while negotiating his own, I wouldn't say crisis of faith. He doesn't have a crisis of faith, but he's haunted by some things in the past vaguely.
Yeah.
That will come to the surface.
That become only slightly less vague over the course of the movie. Yes. But this all starts out, I was very into the opening of this movie because if you don't know shit about Father Amort, you get a great introduction to this character right off the bat. We have an exorcism scene where he talks a devil out of a possessed person by encouraging it to go into a pig. He has somebody fetch a pig for him and talks the spirit into this pig and then just shoots the pig.
They waste no time blowing that pig's brains out.
No, none at all. Yeah.
It's like Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, yeah, it is.
The
seance
with the goat.
With the goat, yeah.
But missing the comedic beat where the pig starts talking shit before they shoot it.
You got to read the book for that.
Yeah.
I love an opening that just like drops you into the action like this, and it also establishes this character very quickly. And I did enjoy Russell Crowe's performance in this. I'm not like a big Russell Crowe guy in general. It's probably like the first time I've enjoyed him in something in a while, but he does have that like sort of impish charm. It's a little more like restrained for Russell Crowe. He's not being an asshole like screaming at people like you often see. It's not an aggressive role like you see Russell Crowe in a lot of the time in real life and in film.
Well, the accent is insane, you have to admit. But he's having fun riding around in his Vespa. And
I love the Vespa, yeah.
Which Father Amort did not have.
He didn't.
One in
real that's life. Pure fiction.
Okay. Nor, I mean, I'd have to look up the distance, but when he rides his Vespa from Italy to Spain, it's like, okay, movie, here we go.
Yeah. Boy, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I thought of that. It's a very funny visual to see like a sort of out of shape, large Russell Crowe wearing his like his Father Marin hat on this little Vespa with his like trench coat blowing
his
in the
scarf
wind.
Like I'm his wearing scarf. That blowing behind him. Yeah, it's cute.
It's so cute. I thought for sure that was inspired by the real life Father Amort.
No, I think Russell Crowe was probably just like, I think he needs a Vespa.
So that's something that's really interesting because there's a lot of goofy stuff in this movie, but it never seems to like take the step into like committing to being like, oh, we're gonna be a comedic movie.
There's a lot of camp in this, you're right, but they never lean in long enough for that tone to settle.
So okay, but to the pig thing, so he blows this pig's brains out, and then next scene we get another nuance to this where he's talking to like the young priests at the Vatican who are all like
the young pope.
You can't, the young pope. They're all like, you know, Father Amort, you can't be doing this shit anymore. And he's like, that guy wasn't possessed. He had a mental health issue, and I was essentially doing like some like role play, you know, that like helped him move through what he was doing, which is true to Father Amort. Like he addresses that in the documentary that we saw as well. So I enjoyed that. Like this guy who knows how to conduct an exorcism, knows the importance of conducting an exorcism, but also knows when it's just bullshit and he just needs to kind of like do therapy for somebody.
Create an illusion to help him. Yeah, because he says something, I think he says like 98% of exorcisms do not involve demonic possession.
Right.
It's just a mental health crisis. But what about the 2%?
Yeah.
That is evil.
Yeah, I felt like it laid a nice foundation that it didn't necessarily maintain the momentum that I felt early on. But I was enjoying this in the early going.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the Abbey and...
We get to the Abbey, and this is I'm not going to say whether I like or dislike the movie, but this is my biggest problem.
We don't do that on the show.
We'll get to that. My biggest problem with the movie is when Russell Crowe isn't on screen, I don't want to watch this fucking movie.
Yes.
And the possession stuff, the exorcism stuff, for a movie that like seems to be a little offbeat over so many of its scenes, the exorcism stuff is played so straight, and we've seen it so many times before.
Same shit.
It's the same shit. I'm like, I don't need to see the kid until Father Amort does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of familiar, tired beats from The Exorcist and everything that's come since then. We got kids saying outrageously sexual things and swearing at their parents. We got a crab walk.
Do you think they have the kids say the words, or do you think they dub it? They're like, say you want her beasts. Can you say that?
I mean, the kid tells Father Amort that he's gonna fuck him and make him climax.
I didn't know this was an R-rated movie. I assumed this was PG-13.
Yeah.
Because I remembered it was like
shocked too,
theatrical. Yeah. And so then like they say fuck, and I'm like, that's it. That's the one. And then they say it again, and I'm like, what's happening? And then they start saying all kinds of shit, and I'm like, oh shit. I rushed the kids out of the room.
But yeah, it's pretty lifeless when he's not on screen. Because again, fun performance. He brings a lot, I think, to this character, but everything else is at best mediocre. The other characters, other performances are at best mediocre. And as you alluded to before, Stephen, like the young actor who plays the possessed boy, like, I mean, I'm not going to spend too much time shitting on like a kid actor, but not the best kid actor I've ever seen.
No, he's not great. Great makeup effects, though.
And yeah, I could tell makeup. He was having fun with the makeup. Like, I could almost, like, feel that kid's joy and being like, you know, like, contorting his face and saying these lines. But they're still, you're just seeing, like, a kid having fun playing a demon more than I'm seeing an actual demon.
Kids aren't scary. They even, like, dub his voiceover with Rory Kinnear or something.
No, it's actually, it's Ralph Ineson.
Oh, that's right.
What's the name of the demon in this? The King of Hell?
Asmodeus. I mean, that might be a spoiler. They treat that like it's a spoiler when they reveal that.
In this movie?
They treat it like the biggest fucking reveal of all time in cinema.
I feel like the camera like pushes into his face and he kind of like turns his face up and it's like Asmodeus.
But you know, there's one Catholic guy in the audience pointing at the screens.
Yeah. That's his like.
I knew it was fucking Asmodeus.
Yeah, that's his like Samuel Jackson walking on screen as Nick Fury. Yeah. That's the Catholic Nick Fury.
Oh, God.
The Catholic Thanos.
You know what? Because, I mean, spoiler, not really spoilers, but like they are doing some stuff to set this up as a franchise.
Oh yeah.
So let's just
up to 200 installments.
Let's just have a friend. I guess they already probably did this with like Left Behind. Well, that was like evangelical Protestant stuff. I'm like, let's make a franchise that's all about Catholic lore. Was that the Da Vinci Code? I think
except Catholics don't like the Da Vinci Code.
Well, they won't like this either. Well, no, I don't know.
Yeah, actually, I would like to get Catholic perspective on this. Oh, also at the Abbey, like the other priest, like the young priest who he ends up teaming up with, kind of. So there's a local priest that the family has called in, and the demon just pushes his shit in. Like, this is way above his pay grade, and that's why Father Amort turns up. And this guy, like, and I realized today, I have just very recently seen him in Woman of the Hour, which we reviewed for the show, and he's great on that. He plays the dating game killer. But in this, I mean, again, not bad. It's just like, this is
not a lot of charisma there.
Milquetoast kind of character. It's just, yeah, there's a lot of kind of just lumps of clay orbiting Russell Crowe in this.
It's a, yeah, it's a, there's nothing really, it's the kind of role. And I was thinking about this, Patrick and I also, not horror, but we both watched all of The Penguin since we were together last on HBO, which I started off as like, fuck, I guess I'll watch The Penguin. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to convince myself this is something that's fucking worth watching. I watched three episodes. I'm like, I guess that was all right. My standards are low. By the end of that series, I was like, fuck, I love The Penguin. Gotta have more Penguins. but my point is, that's The Penguin is a show where there's like all these supporting characters who like don't, the role itself could be unremarkable, but the actors really flesh them out and make them really compelling characters.
Yeah,
same kind of scenario here where it's like a
so
really
the point that like the central performance, which is very distinctive and certainly unforgettable, like almost fades into the background. Like at some point I was like, Colin Farrell. Penguin's back, whatever, like give me Sophia or Vic or whatever again.
These actors you've never heard of before in your life are upstaging Colin Farrell in his like stunt showcase performance. But like this priest is like that kind of guy where it's like just kind of a thankless role, and I don't blame the actor for being dull in it. But a great actor I think could have made him more interesting somehow.
Or just a better script at some point.
Lots of blame to go around.
This is from the director of Overlord. Did either of you watch Overlord?
No. Familiar, but I've not seen it.
I saw it in theaters. It didn't turn the dial
that's
much
like
for me.
Nazi horror movie?
Like World War II.
Okay.
So like Operation Overlord, except with zombies.
They're killing Nazis.
Shadow in the Cloud, but no Gremlin.
Yeah, it's the poor man's Shadow in the Cloud. I'm at a point where like, so there's a weird kind of, a twist, certainly a big discovery midway-ish through this. I almost feel like we're about there and maybe we should just go down to the spoiler well.
Let's just fucking review it. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? I for a second, I could not remember what you're talking about.
But... until I said spoiler well.
Oh, yeah. Patrick, would you view it, cue it, or screw it? That's a tough one.
I guess I'll give it a Q. I'm on the line between Q and screw. Russell Crowe's fun. It's fun. It's fun to watch for Russell Crowe giving the most interesting performance I've seen him give in a while. And that's still not like the highest recommendation in the world because I don't find Russell Crowe terribly interesting to begin with. But this takes a couple like weird little gonzo. There are a few kind of gonzo moments to this at the end. The twist that we're going to talk about in the spoiler room is fucking insane. I don't know if I like it, but it's interesting. The more I talk about this, the more I'm like, I should just screw this. Actually, you know what? Yeah, screw it. Never mind. Screw it. Steven.
Well, you guys know I hate possession movies. It's like my least favorite genre because like I don't believe in the devil, so I don't see any real credible threat here. That said, this movie is, I think, quite slow. It's a little too long, but there are enough memorable moments in it, especially involving the Vespa and Russell Crowe's accent, and a couple of really shocking gore moments at the end, too, that I would give, if this is your bag, if you don't mind a possession movie, I would give this a cue it. Chris?
I will also give it a cue it somewhat begrudgingly. It's the best possession. Well, no, I was going to say it's the best possession movie I've seen since the Vatican Tapes, which it has a lot in common with.
I thought about you and that film a lot. Yeah, Chris.
I was because they go to the Vatican archives. And I'm like, show me the tapes. they're even like looking through all these like fucking centuries old manuscripts to find research and stuff. I'm like, wish you had tapes. If you had that on tape, you solve a lot of your mystery for it.
They're in the process of archiving everything and getting it on computers.
They're
tapes,
digitizing.
I was gonna say all these documents and on a Blu-ray and site.
They can't decide between Vatican tapes and Vatican beta.
Yeah. Vatican laser discs.
Vatican laser disc.
That's a better joke. Okay. Yeah, but I was gonna say it's the best I've seen since the Vatican tapes. But I forgot I've also seen the first Omen since then, which is a very good and somewhat distinct possession movie. I think it's a possession movie. It's been a while. Definitely has some of the tropes. Anyway, it's just it doesn't do enough to break out of that just super dull possession movie trope thing, and that's upsetting. But in its creative and fun moments, it's fun. And Russell Crowe's charming. And some of the stuff we're going to talk about in the spoiler room, I thought was very interesting and stuff I didn't expect to see in this sort of movie that I appreciated. And I wanted more of it. So, yeah, you could check it out or not. Cue it.
You know what? I'm going to be John Kerry tonight. I'm going to flip-flop back to Cue It because I was on the line and now... This is the last movie we're going to review together for at least a while.
You want to turn down the temperature?
Yeah, I want to turn down the temperature. Like, Biden's going to be out of office soon, so I'm going to turn down the temperature one last time.
Oh, hey, Jack, cool it down.
Switch back. Yeah. Anyways, we're going down the spoiler well in just a minute. But before we head there, I will remind you, as always, to follow us on social media. We are at Amoncast, EHMONcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Nazi owned X. Also, go to your podcast provider of choice and leave us a review. Follow the show. We love to see the feedback and it helps people find the podcast. You can also go to our Broken website. It is the holiday season. If you want to share a Amon piece of merchandise, like the t-shirt that I'm actually wearing right now, you can click on the merch store link at everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com.
Is that website's your problem now?
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting transition.
Yeah, good luck adding in everything from pizza, I think, was the last movie that we updated.
Yeah.
I ain't fixing that shit. Fuck you.
You never were anyway.
It's on my to-do list.
There may not be a website by the time you go there to do your Christmas shopping, but at least give it a shot. In the meantime, we are going to head down the spoiler well, and we will see you there in just a minute. Right, we are back to spoil everything about the Pope's Exorcist. So I keep referencing this spoiler well because I guess kind of the pivotal discovery here, and I don't know if I'm forgetting something because I watched this movie a little while ago, or if it's just not really explained. But there's a well in the front yard of this abbey that Russell Crowe ends up investigating and finding. A kind of insane discovery beneath, but how does he know to look in the well in the first place?
It
Do you guys
this,
remember?
I just
this
remember
pure
that
chance?
I remember that the lid to the well. Well, so first of all, his superior tells him the beginning, like when he takes the assignment, that like this abbey has given us problems before. I don't remember how he phrases that, and then he notices, and I don't remember why he's investigating it, but he notices that the lid to the well has the seal of the Vatican on it. So what does he do? He ties it up to his vest, but yanks it off and drops a flaming tissue down into it, which, again, we already know. Tissue. We already know that there have been gas explosions in the renovation of this home, and we get a big one from that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of how the ancient evil is uncovered, because there's construction people down there and there's like something spooky behind the crumbling wall, and then they're trying to investigate what's there and they light a flare and it blows up the place, whatever. And then like the next scene, the mom is like, I don't know what we're going to do. This is all we have left. This is we have to sell this abbey. I'm like, fucking call Chevron. They're like, you got like gas deposits. They're like, you
call Miss Dig.
You got a shit ton of natural gas on your property just oozing out of the walls.
Miss Dig. Oh boy.
Get on Angie's list and find some new. It's just called Angie now. Anyway,
but yeah, they have this well just lined with
skulls.
Spooky skulls. Yeah. Good visuals.
Oh, great visual. Yeah. Remind me of a fucking creepy ass crypt that I was in when I was in Rome. I don't know if you guys saw my picture of this, but there's this...
I don't look at pictures of dead people.
There's this place called the Crypt of the Capuchins in Rome, and it was this Capuchin monastery, and there was some crazy-ass Capuchin monk who built this series of, I think it's 4 or 5 rooms. He used bones of, I can't even imagine how many. It has to be at least 1,000. Yeah, maybe. I have no idea how to exaggerate. How to estimate. I do know how to exaggerate, but not estimate. Certainly at least hundreds of skeletons that he disassembled and like just filled these rooms, lined them with bones and skulls. And like he's got skeletons standing up, and in other places, like the bones are just like ornamentation. It was shocking. One of the strangest things I've ever seen. And very similar to what we see down the well. But when they get down the well, they realize there's a fucking Spanish Inquisition torture chamber underneath this motherfucker.
And I could not, I liked it. I could not understand it, though. This is my favorite part of the movie. It turns into like a horror Indiana Jones movie where they're going through these crypts. And Russell Crowe, Father Amort, is using his knowledge as like a scholar of theology to be like, oh, I know what this is. This is the darkest day in the history of the Catholic Church, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and this is where it takes on some Da Vinci Code energy.
Yeah, and there's a few things in this movie, too, where it's like they're a little aware that audiences are tiring of the, like, Catholic possession narrative, and they're trying to, like, throw in some modern commentary and critique of the Catholic Church. Like, oh, yeah, even though our hero is a priest... did you know that the Catholic Church did the Spanish Inquisition? And did you know that they cover up crimes and abuses and stuff? And it's like, all right, it's kind of cool that they're putting that in there, but also I'm like,
you're still preaching to the choir, though.
You're still making the movie about like the heroic priests who believe that like you just have to pray harder to overcome evil. But, I mean, there are a lot of practicing Catholics who have that. I'm sure this had to have been written by a Catholic person, right?
I have no idea.
It was written by at least 3 people. Personally. Maybe one of them was Catholic. Yeah, I don't know.
But, like, there are a lot of practicing Catholics who probably have similar view, where it's like, yes, God is good, priests are good, praying's good, but let's call out the church on some issues.
The central realization, I guess, from this torture chamber discovery is that, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because again, like it's sort of weird and muddly, but the church previously tried to trap this demon Asmodeus, who we have referenced already, or tried to exorcise him in this same building, in the same chamber before. There's like a weird like Iron Maiden looking sort of torture thing in the middle of the room, and Father Amort's like, oh, it looks like this was for a prisoner, but it was actually for like an exorcist so that he could be sealed in the room with the demon, and then the demon couldn't leave the room.
I
think, foreshadowing, spoiler alert, I think it's an exorcist who became possessed by demon. Maybe.
Oh. Yeah, it could be. My understanding was that like he had to stay there in the room with the demon, or else the demon would escape.
Because this demon, like, maybe, I don't know. Like I say, Russell Crowe's fucking mumbling all this in like 2 different accents.
Yeah, and 2 different languages. There's a lot of Italian language dialogue in this. Actually, me too.
They only speak English when there's like a reason in the story for them to speak English. And they're like, can I switch to English?
Wouldn't go that far.
Okay. But they,
at first I thought the same, and then I was like, no, the rules have gone out the window. Like, they could be speaking Italian.
They should have just done the, what used to be called the Judgment at Nuremberg thing, but is now the Avatar, the Way of Water thing, where it starts off in the foreign language and then it cuts to English, and it's English the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And Avatar, Steven, you haven't seen Avatar The Way of Water.
How do you know that?
Because I've been begging you to come over and watch.
I was going to say, I feel like this is, you talk about this at least every other episode, and this will be the last one you ever do.
This and Elvis.
Yeah. Without us recording.
Oh, unless together, you pressure him to watch Avatar on the year-end episode.
Well, with us being together in our last time or two here, it's it's going to be more difficult for me to entrap Steven into watching things.
That's true. And that is all reasons. Part of the plan.
Yeah, that's the whole reason I started this show. Anyway, Avatar: The Way of Water starts off, they're all speaking Na'vi, and then you hear Jake Sully's narration, and he's like, after a while, the language sounds just like English. And as he says that, the kids start speaking English.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's pretty much what this movie is. To a T.
I mean, it's a good, no one wants to hear the Russell Crowe speaking Italian for a whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I do.
I didn't love The Way of Water. I don't love Avatar in general, but it was a fine, like, the diegetic way to explain away not having your entire movie in a fake foreign language and subtitled. Yeah. But anyways, enough about fucking Avatar.
Let's talk about Avatar some more.
No, let's not. Okay. So they realize somehow, and again, don't know quite how, forget how, that the demon is Asmodeus. And Asmodeus's deal is he's an exorcist collector.
Yes.
He doesn't like just possessing regular old souls. He likes going after exorcists. So he, you know, it's kind of a classic, he wanted us to catch him kind of moment, where it's like he wanted Father Amort to come here. He's after Father Amort. That's the only thing he wants.
And his game plan is what? He's 10 years old. He's sitting in the bed. He's not tied up.
I mean, Asmodeus isn't 10 years old. He's centuries old. He's older than time itself.
He's in a 10-year-old vessel, though.
Yes.
And this vessel, the 10-year-old Moppet vessel, is not
the 10-year-old Banku vessel.
Banku, Mr. Banku vessel is not tied up for a very long time in this. I don't think it's till like the final exorcism that they actually tie his ass up.
Well, wait, his sister gets possessed too.
Yeah. So
they're both simultaneously possessed. And I was like, is this a David Gordon Green film? Or
I don't get it.
You don't get it? That was the whole gimmick of the Exorcist Believer.
I didn't see the Exorcist Believer.
Me neither.
We talked about it.
And it's the marketing.
I saw that.
Anyway,
I went to get, I went to get more popcorn every time that trailer was on. I was like, I got popcorn already. I gotta go get some more because that trailer's on. All
right. Well, that bombed. Anyway.
My joke or the film?
Not as hard.
My
as
reference.
Not as hard as the film.
My
did.
Reference and the film.
Yeah, I don't know, but like, he's 10 years old, and his strategy is that he's just gonna kind of like, he's gonna basically trigger these, for lack of a better word, he's gonna trigger the priests by just alluding to the traumatic moments of their life.
Yeah.
So Father Amort counseled a,
and both of their traumatic experiences are fucking stupid.
They're not that traumatic.
I don't know if I even remember what they are, honestly.
Yeah.
There's one young woman.
They're forgettable.
Oh, that he gave up on.
He gave up on her because he was like, well, she's mentally ill. This isn't a case for an exorcist. And then she ended up killing herself.
And she says to him at one point, at night, the devil fucks me and he looks like you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Because both their like past misdeeds come back to haunt them in the form of like potential hallucinations or manifestations of Asmodeus or something. So that's,
it's a movie about trauma.
And she was like, she was like being sexually abused by clergy, right?
Yes,
that's what was really happening with her. Okay. Yeah.
And then, so that's sort of, I think, why he was like, okay, well, even with the mentally ill people, I'm still going to like try to like give them alternative therapy into coming out of their, like their psychosomatic possession.
Yeah. And the younger priest, like, was fucking a younger woman.
Yeah. So what?
Which he's not supposed to be doing because he's a priest, but also, like, yeah, I think there's a pretty significant,
and then he broke her
pretty
heart.
Significant age difference.
He broke her heart because she wanted him to leave the priesthood, and he acted like he was gonna, but he had no intention to.
Yeah.
But I don't think she died.
Yeah, real meaty, interesting stuff.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, so that's the kid. The kid's just like, remember that.
Yeah.
Remember when you had sex with that girl?
Yeah.
And then sometimes, yeah, he shapeshifts, but.
And then Amort just allows himself to be possessed because I think he figures he can take it, which of course he ends up, being able to take it.
I don't remember the play-by-play. I mean, it turns into like your typical exorcism shit. Everybody's screaming.
It becomes kind of a, you guys are going to hate me for saying this, but it does become, it starts to kind of follow like the climax of like a Marvel type movie at the end. I feel like It becomes like a much bigger set piece than I expected from this thing. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, I'm actually more on that side of things, Steven, than what Chris said, because I think this goes in a completely insane direction where you wind up with like fucking Russell Crowe, possessed Russell Crowe, sitting on like this giant throne in the basement, like manspreading with a staff in his hand.
Yeah, okay. Jaw like extends saying, like a foot at one point.
Yeah, just saying cold shit to the other priest.
But that's when I leaned in and started paying attention again.
Yeah.
Because the whole actual like...
Oh, it became interesting.
Oh, the lead up to that is
the whole lead up to that is
standard exorcism.
Standard exorcism, kid in the bed, everybody's screaming, everybody's levitating. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And then something happens. Russell Crowe gets possessed.
He gets possessed, yeah.
I still don't give a shit, especially because I know from watching William Friedkin's documentary that he's going to live to do the first ever videotape exorcism in like 2014.
Wouldn't it be funny if this franchise actually does continue and they do like a narrative, like they do a film where someone plays Friedkin and Russell Crowe? Oh,
I volunteer.
Would watch.
I volunteer to play Friedkin.
You're not old enough.
They can age me up. But yeah, and then they go down in the catacombs and now it's interesting again.
Yeah, because this is where our like couple of gonzo like blood and guts moments that we mentioned before.
The
come
woman
in.
Who comes out of the Iron Maiden explodes in a bloodbath.
Yeah, like Cronenberg shit. Like that was shot in, and I mean it's bright red blood.
Yes.
It feels unlike anything else in the entire movie. Cuz it's not a particularly like gory movie. It just comes out of nowhere, which kind of made it more delightful than if it was like an Evil Dead where you have something insane like that happening every 2 seconds.
Yeah, this was like gallons and gallons and gallons of, I thought of Evil Dead. Like
chunks.
It's that much blood.
Yeah. Her entire body just...
It's so curious to me how this movie ends up this way. Because it seems like there was just a little bit of a bolder idea for this movie that maybe got watered down by people trying to make it, you know, something, everything for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the woman Steven's talking about who explodes is like the sort of demonic representation of the guy that the younger priest had this relationship with. Or wait, is it the other way around? Is that Russell Crowe's woman who traumatized him? Which it's funny.
She's covered in blood, so I couldn't
women.
Tell.
They're each attacked by their own.
That's right. It's the younger priest's
women.
Ex. Yeah.
Women are evil is the message of this one.
And I forget what happens to... Yeah, honestly. And what happens to Russell Crowe's woman? There's something sort of shocking
woman.
With her,
too. It's just
too.
So shocking to me to hear...
No, yeah. I know, but like that's the vibe, though.
It is.
It's like,
is 100%.
Women fucked them both over, you know? And then they both explode. But actually, what does happen to her? It's something weird.
She's
too.
Like floating up because she ate a bird while she was possessed or something. And there's a whole thing where there's like a million red birds... down there in the catacombs.
Maybe I fell asleep for that too.
Pray it away.
I mean in the end, yes.
Yeah,
that's how they like unpossess.
They pray away the
it's good
bay.
For getting rid of the gay too.
Yeah. They pray away the bays
exactly. But no, yeah, that's the solution in the end, because I was like, okay, he's welcoming this demon into himself, like where do we go from here? And basically it's just the other priest prays hard enough and then they pray real hard together. And
oh, they pray real
it's
hard.
All good. Yeah.
I want to read the book.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that brings us to the end as much as any. Oh, we forgot to mention the Pope is in this movie. The Pope is a character in this movie who falls
it's
ill.
It's a fictitious Pope, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's still insane, kind of.
They should have just had someone play Pope John Paul II. Mm-hmm.
The second, yeah.
Why? Why not?
I don't know.
They got timid.
That was a bridge too far.
That was a bridge too far.
But it's still kind of deranged that in these final proceedings, we're cutting back and forth to like the Vatican where the Pope is ailing as a result of all this. Like he's in bed. He's
and like
sick.
Spitting blood like the Dilophosaurus.
Oh yeah, that was the other insane like Evil Dead moment where he just like.
Okay, I don't remember that at all.
Sprays it all. Doesn't he spray it all over the like precocious young Pope?
The young Pope,
who
hates
Russell Crowe.
Yep.
The prosecutor at the little tribunal.
And if he doesn't, if he's misremembering, I don't want to be corrected. I want to remember it that way.
Well, and the guy you're talking about, I think it's strongly hinted that he has engaged in some sexual improprieties that have been caught by his colleagues because they ship him off to Guam.
Oh, yeah.
And Russell Crowe says, then I will pray for Guam.
Oh, I didn't understand that he had sexual improprieties.
They don't state it
explicitly,
but that's what they're talking about.
He's on frequencies I'm not on here.
He's on sabbatical. Yeah.
Well, that's what they do. Movies about that is Spotlight.
Yeah. That was a funny line, though. Then I shall pray for Guam.
See, the guy I'm talking about who points at the screen when they name the demon, he was in the theater when Patrick and I saw Spotlight. There was a boomer a few rows in front of us, and there's a line in the Spotlight where they're like,
I love how we saw this at least 10 years ago, and I forget this every time until you retell the story at least once a year.
I don't remember you telling this story before.
There's a line in Spotlight where like there's some guys in a bar, and one of them's like, this is Boston. The church owns it, controls everything. And when that line hit, this boomer in like three rows ahead of us like stands up and starts clapping.
In the state theater, just to contextualize.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Would have made even more sense in the Michigan if you really want to put on airs. But wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, everything's fine. Everybody kind of gets their lives back. They, they get the young pope, the shitty priest, off of Father Amort's back. And then they take him into like the Ark of the Covenant room, basically, except for the Catholic Church.
A hilarious fucking visual, because it's like, it looks like the Jedi library or something. And in the center, there's like,
what's that statue?
There's the scariest statue you've ever seen in your life.
I paused and just like took in every inch of that thing, and I have no idea what to make of it.
I have no idea if that's based on any.
There's a bit of a like a Crown of Thorns aesthetic to it, but it also looks like the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
It's very muscular, I'll say, too.
But they take him in there because, like, and this was also revealed in part in the, like, Spanish Inquisition room, but Asmodeus is one of 200 different demons that Satan, like, threw down to Earth to, like, try and take shit back or whatever. So they've taken down Asmodeus, and there are now 199 others. And so it's, like, your ultimate sequel setup. It's not just one sequel. It's, like, you could have up to 199 more Pope's Exorcist movies if you wanted them.
And let's go to work. Let's go to hell.
Let's go to hell. Yeah, that's his final spoken line.
That was so good.
It's great. It's great. But, like, and I want to see these movies. Is there a sequel? I think there is a sequel for Pope's Exorcist coming, right?
It's not confirmed yet, but there's definitely, I saw it's in development, I think.
Maybe that'll be like Russell Crowe's Liam Neeson thing, where he just makes like 20 shitty movies where he plays Father Amort.
I'd be down-ish for it. Especially if they could improve on this one.
I would cue it.
But yeah, I would cue it, exactly.
Here's the thing. The ending is the same as the ending of the Vatican tapes, where they go to the Vatican, they look at the tapes, and they're like, oh, there's more to do. Let's go fight some evil. And I'm like, you guys are working at cross purposes here. We can only do this for one franchise. The powers have to combine. Maybe do a crossover.
You want the Vatican tapes crossover with the Pope.
I'm not going to lie. I like pilled myself into thinking that this was from... Who did Vatican Tapes? Neville Demon Taylor?
Yeah.
I thought, like...
Or maybe just one of them.
Just one Neville of them. Demon. Yeah. I thought it was the same creators when I was going into this. Mm. And that would make a lot of sense.
It would make so
true.
Much sense.
Like their dark universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? Speaking of 200 movies, it also would fit with, like... This movie reminded me a lot of The Nun. I don't know if either of you have seen The Nun.
No.
I think I might have.
The Nun, it's the same shit. It's like, oh, here's an abbey. Oh, God, there's a demon in the basement. You gotta go down to the well. You gotta fight the nun, which is a demon. And that one ends, spoiler alert, she, like, has a vial of Christ's blood. That's like a relic that she, like, wears. And she bites it, and she spits the blood of Jesus Christ onto the nun.
Wow.
Again, that's like awesome. The Dilophosaurus.
That's great.
But anyway, point is, we got too many of these franchises, and we need one. We need to bring them together and make one franchise to rule them all that has 200 films in it.
But before we move on to the Pope's Exorcist 2 of 200, the creators of this film say to Father Amort, it's like a podcast. They're like, you have anything to plug?
Yeah. there's a few scenes in this film where Father Mort talks about how good his books are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what that's referencing? Is he says how good they are, and that's why it says the books are... So, okay, what we're talking about is there's, like, a text crawl over the final shot of, like, Father Immort, like, either... I think he's walking. He, like, gets off his Vespa and, like, walks towards the Colosseum dramatically. It's the final shot, and then it's, like, you know, Father Immort died in 2016 or whenever it was. He published 17,000 books or however many it was. The books are very good. Final text.
It is, yeah. No, it's just, it says how many books he wrote, and then it just says, the books are good.
The books are good.
And I screamed.
Because
for the third time in this
film. At least one occasion earlier in the film, it's a punchline that he's sort of plugging his book to another character.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, my book is good, whatever.
Okay. I didn't catch that it was a callback to that.
It's still a completely ridiculous note to end the movie.
It is. Wait, what were your three screams again? Like, recap the scream. So obviously that we just talked about.
Oh, the Iron Maiden blood explosion was a scream. And the pig. The pig made me scream really hard. Yeah.
Very good. I mean, you know, like, three screen movie, not too bad. Gotta give it credit for that.
Fuck, should I go back and give it a view?
So with all my free time I'm gonna have not doing this show, I'm gonna write a franchise of spooky adventure films. It's gonna be like Indiana Jones but Catholic.
Or like you know what, another movie I thought of while watching this a lot was National Treasure. I don't know why, but it had a bit of that energy to me as well.
Yeah,
which I quite enjoy.
For sure. Yeah. No, what you should do, so like write your franchise, but then also could be like a bonanza thing, actually, where like you could just change the name of the character and it could be like The Pope's Exorcist 6 or something.
Yeah. The Taking of Hoss. Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those cases of like someone had generic exorcism screenplay and they're like, well, how can we make this more interesting?
Yeah.
Bit of a punch-up job, maybe.
Let's base it on everyone's favorite exorcist. That, like, only we know. That's still a thing that gets me about this, is that this interested me, at least, because of this character, real-life character that we already knew of. But, like, nobody... I mean, I'm not going to say nobody, but there's such a limited audience that would be attracted to this character in particular.
Well, this is how people are learning about it. And I've run into, you know, like everyone in my like work life and other friends circles and things, like they know I'm a horror person, but a lot of them aren't horror people. But I ran into at least half a dozen folks in the past year who were like, yeah, did you hear about this movie, The Pope's Exorcist? And I'm like, yeah, I've watched a documentary about that for my podcast that I co-host. And they're like, whoa, what? No way. It is a real guy? So this was a gateway. I could see it having big franchise potential.
I think the Catholic Church has just been out in L.A. trying to talk to producers because they thought, like, this is a positive story about the church.
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah.
This guy, this swearing, whiskey-drinking, irascible motherfucker.
Oh, Scorsese needs to direct a fucking Pope's Exorcist.
He's got so few years left. I know. He should focus on his own passion projects, I think.
All right, well, I think we've sent the Pope's Exorcist back to hell. I would ask what we're watching next time, but we're doing our year-end episode, and then you guys are getting the fuck out.
Yeah.
The fuck out of here.
All right. Well, I'm going to figure out what I'm watching next time then, I guess.
Yeah, you got unlimited.
I'll leave everyone in suspense
like
about that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like Trump.
Yeah. No checks and balances.
No guardrails.
You cannot be prosecuted for any official movie pick.
All right. Well, that's it for The Pope's Exorcist. We will see you in couple weeks ish
end of the
new
year
year's, new year's
the
eve
new year's
yeah,
eve
new year's maybe? Eve we'll have the year-end episode out on New Year's Eve, so you can drink a cup of Auld Lang Syne with us. And until then, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Chris.
And I've been Steven.
We'll see you New Year's Eve.